is friendly and which are neighborhood friendly. Understand the alliances they form and why. Determine whose vote you need to pass your project through. Work on political campaigns and attend political functions. Go to events where they are present and make yourself visible. Find out the local election dates and when different members of the city council are up for re-election. Tip: when it comes to politics, you do not want to bring a controversial case before the city council within 12 months of the election of any member of the city council whose vote you will need. The politician's desire to be re-elected will work against you every time. Does all this homework, knowledge building, and cultivation of relationships guarantee success? The answer is yes and no. Yes, it will lead to great successes for you because you are way ahead of the curve and therefore ahead of your competitors who do not make the time or the effort. But no, like all of life, there will be some setbacks. It is therefore important to know when to cut your losses, and I am the first to admit that despite all my success in the realm of real estate and entitlements, some things are beyond my control. Real life story. Crack the code to corner your market. Some time ago, I was trying to purchase a corner that was zoned properly for the commercial retail center I wanted to develop. I had a major grocery chain interested in leasing part of the property, but the grocery store representative wanted to have a meeting with the head of the city planning department before moving forward. At that meeting, the head of the city planning department asked the grocery store to locate to another property that was miles from my site, stating that he believed the trade area my site was located in was already adequately served, and the property he was offering had a trade area that was underserved. This is city code for saying that the city can generate more income from sales tax revenue by locating a business in one area over another. The city views each piece of property based on varying degrees of revenue-producing potential. Luckily, in this case, the sales pitch didn't work, and the grocer ultimately located on my site due to the stability of the trade area. Lesson learned. Altruism usually isn't. Crack the code, and you'll understand the real motives. Stay ahead of neighborhood opposition. No matter what project you propose for a neighborhood, there will be neighborhood opposition. Indeed, I began this chapter giving you the top 20 neighborly complaints. Expect these opposing views and build them into your plan. Again, knowledge is power. But as you are planning, be proactive. Your mission. Study the leaders of the neighborhood opposition. Is it the same person or group of people who show up for every entitlement case? What are their backgrounds? Are they NIMBYs responding only to issues next to their neighborhood? Or are they full-fledged activists on zoning issues with the community at large? Talk to them. Listen to their issues. Become their friend. Do they use the internet to communicate with one another? See if you can get on their email list. Try to get hold of the database to be able to communicate with all of the neighbors. Then when it comes time to present your project, your message will be heard directly from you without filtering. Go to every neighborhood meeting. Get on neighborhood boards. Set up your own internet website as a proactive approach to groups or individuals both for and against your project. Use your website to educate the public about your project. Include testimonials and quotes from supporters of your project, especially neighbors. This will be a counterweight to NIMBY websites and help you control your message. Most important, do not view NIMBYs as your mortal enemies, although they clearly can have an impact on your aspirations and your billfold. I approach them as citizens who want to be heard for some reason, and not necessarily the reason they may be voicing. Sometimes it can be a gripe or grievance that can be addressed without any harm to your project. Treat them with respect, and some can even be turned around to your point of view. Real life story. turning a mountain into a molehill. One project I developed early in my career involved a residential community. The owner of the property adjoining mine believed that my property would stay vacant forever. Recall complaint number 2 in the top 20 list. Now that I had arrived, he feared that my development would impede his view of a mountain. We talked about his concerns at length, and after some homework, I came back to show him how I could reorient the houses to maintain his view. Recall complaint number 4 in the top 20 list. In effect, I converted an adversary into an advocate, and the project went through. Lesson learned? Compromise can turn NIMBYs into allies. Have a timetable and patience. Depending on the jurisdiction in which you are working, entitlements can take anywhere from 6 months to many years. Here is the short and the long of it. Short timetable. This comes into play only if you have the full support of all parties. It is just the actual process itself that takes time. Long timetable. If you encounter opposition to a project, and or if you have developmental issues, that is, water rights, environmental, access, etc., your timetable will be extended. Realistic timetables are critical to your success for several reasons. You don't want your case to be heard in an election cycle. If you are working with a landowner and you are purchasing the property subject to receiving entitlements by a fixed date, you don't want to run out of time with your seller and be unentitled. You will have invested too much time, effort, and money to get to this point. The market cycle in real estate may pass you by. The capital markets change. The supply of money, interest rates, and underwriting criteria may change. Get to know the developers and builders. Just as you have met every staffer and every committee and council member at City Hall, meet every developer and builder that makes an application. Call them on the phone and make an appointment to learn about their projects. Meet them at all hearings. They will be enthusiastic to tell you about their projects because they will want your support. Your mission. When you speak with the developers and builders, seek to answer the following questions. What are the opposition's issues, and how are you, the developer or builder, overcoming those objections? What third-party vendors are you using? These may include the following: land planner, architect, civil and structural engineer, zoning attorney, traffic engineer, contractor, and their subcontractors. Who does your soils report, and who performs your environmental studies? What title company and escrow officer do you use? What real estate broker are you using? After attending a number of meetings, you'll have a good idea of the vendors who do quality work and can perform on time. These vendors will become invaluable to you when the time comes to put your own team together. Think of the education you will be getting from actual practitioners, and it's free. A few truths about buyers and builders. A new home buyer is sold on a home before he or she walks in the front door. The streetscape of the subdivision, landscaping, and the elevation of the home are most important for the sale. School districts matter. Locate your residential developments in the best ones. Cities with the best images may be more expensive, but create the most security for your investment. See if the builder will share his infrastructure costs with you. Find out, on average, how much is the cost to engineer the subdivision to a recorded plat, that is called paper lots. How much does it cost on a per-lot basis to construct the streets, sewer, water, common area amenities, and landscaping? It's good to know how much it will cost a home builder to improve a single-family lot. Builders will pay 20 to 25% of the sales price of the home for an improved lot. Understand what developers and builders want. To repeat, knowledge is your most important asset. I made getting it a point early on in my career and continue it to this day. When it comes to developers and builders, I try to find out everything I can from each type. I want to know as much as I can about single-family, multifamily, retail, office, industrial, or mixed-use development. These developers and builders are putting their knowledge, reputation, and capital on the line. Why not learn as much as you can from them? All of these resources are coming to the city seeking approvals. It's a knowledge vein that is yours for the mining and is much better than school-based education. This is the real world, and that is where money is made. Your only impediment to success is your own lack of effort in mining this knowledge. Tip: builders want to acquire entitled property. Hence, you are of great value to them, and they will pay for that value. Entitlements involve all types of real estate: apartment buildings, residential, commercial, medical, mixed use. The key is to be aware of the specific requirements of each and understand the differences. Then learn as much as you can about similar projects and how they have been entitled. Here are the questions that I have asked of developers and builders. This will get you started and will help expand your knowledge base for planning your first project. Your mission: ask residential builders these questions. What size lots do you want to develop? Why that size? What are the setback distances from the front, back, and side yards? What are the sizes of the homes you are building? How many phases do you plan for? How many lots per phase? How many lots do you need in order for you to develop a model home complex? Where do you like to locate your models within the subdivision? Why? Beyond just asking questions, visit their subdivisions. Go through their model homes. Talk to the salespeople. Find out what are the most sought-after home features buyers ask for and why. By knowing the kind of product they build, you'll be in a better position to provide them the entitled land they are looking for down the road. Your mission? Ask apartment builders these questions, the same as before, plus these additional. What density do you like to build? Usually it is 14 to 21 units per acre, depending on the city and projected rental rate of the project. How many units does it take to make a project operationally feasible? What do you pay per unit, referred to as per door, for a piece of property that is entitled? What unit mix, 1, 2, or 3-bedroom units, are best for the market? What size, 1, 2, or 3-bedroom units, do residents want most? What is the best mix? What rental rates does the market accept? What amenities are being offered and why? How many parking spaces per unit does the city require versus the market demand? What is the land size necessary for the density needed to operate and park properly? Are there any specific lighting, trash locations, and noise abatement issues? What kind of vehicle and pedestrian integration into the adjoining neighborhoods is needed? What about schools and crime? Your first project and jumpstart game plan. After 6 months of hard work, you now possess the 3 secrets to entitlements that can lead to great success, and you should be able to rapid-fire repeat them by now. 1. Knowledge. 2. Knowledge. 3. Knowledge. Gaining these assets has brought you to this point, and no one can take your knowledge from you. You can succeed or fail using other types of capital, but your best chance of success in entitlements is directly proportional to your knowledge capital. Tip: principal rule: use your knowledge base as capital to create value. Your mission: put into action my jumpstart game plan to get your first project off the ground. Scott's jumpstart game plan. 1. From the knowledge you have gained, you can put together the best team of third-party vendors, such as surveyors, land planners, environmental companies, etc. Quality and reliability are key. 2. You know which areas of the community are sought after the most. Ask your real estate broker to map out vacant land or redevelopment opportunities in this area. Try to locate in a popular school district. 3. Compare your prospective sites to the city's general plan. 4. From your learned knowledge, work with your land planner in developing a plan which will be marketable to a buyer upon receiving entitlements. 5. Because you learned from the builders what they are willing to pay for entitled property, apply that number to the value of the property. 6. From that price, subtract the following: the cost of the land, unusual or extra costs of construction required for the property you are considering. This might include rocky or expansive soil conditions, bringing in utilities to the property, undergrounding power lines or irrigation ditches, the cost of your team's work to entitle the property, your cost of resale, brokerage fees, and title work. 7. If you are successful in entitling the property, this total will be the profit you earn for your knowledge and hard work. Determine if that bottom line is acceptable to you for your time and effort and cost of planning. 8. Meet with the people you are now familiar with in the city's planning department. Ask what use and density they would recommend for each property you have potentially selected. See if it matches your estimate. 9. Narrow the scope of your search to the most profitable properties if they were entitled for what you want and what the city staff would recommend. 10. Work with the landowner of the property you want to purchase. The landowner already has his capital in the land. Find out the motivation behind the landowner's desire to sell. If you can meet the seller's need, you might be able to get enough time to purchase the property subject to getting it entitled. Again, your profit is the value you create through entitlements. Real life story. Be prepared for unusual requirements or actions that often defy logic. You will be exposed to every imaginable roadblock for your project, from underground mice to crashing airplanes. Do not be discouraged. I've encountered the most outrageous hurdles. Approach them with tenacity, and later you'll have great stories that will keep everyone laughing. Hurdle number one, or the mouse that roared. We were working on a master plan development in Colorado. The Fish and Game Department was concerned that an endangered animal known as a Preble's mouse might exist on the property. Unfortunately, the only way to prove that supposition was to catch mice, kill them, and check their DNA for a match, thus potentially endangering the endangered species in the process. The department decided that we needed to set aside property within the development to provide habitat, just in case the mouse existed. Moreover, they told us that we had to impose a ban on the ownership of cats by residents, since they might hunt and kill the mouse should it exist. This is no joke. Through negotiations, we were able to change the department's requirement from forbidding cats entirely to making it a requirement in the covenants, conditions, and restrictions, CC&Rs, of the community that any cats residing in our community would have to remain indoors. We complied, fully realizing that this was the political solution to a problem. Commissioners, developer, residents, and mice were all happy campers. Hurdle number two, or sinking the boat to see if it floats. We wanted to subdivide 620 acres in Santa Barbara County, California. It was an area where water was scarce and permits were rationed for homes. However, we had 3 wells on the property, and the hydrology reports concluded that there was more than enough water for the development. The county determined the reports to be insufficient and decided that, despite the scarcity of water in the area, they would need to measure the water in the wells by letting the water run into ditches for an entire year. At the end of the year, and at great cost and enormous loss of water, it was determined that, in fact, there would be sufficient water for the development. Hurdle number three, or playing it straight. For a seemingly simple single-family residential subdivision with improved lots, we proposed a layout that was a little out of the ordinary. It involved adding curves to roads rather than creating a straight grid plan where houses lined up like barracks. The staff for this city said the plan was unacceptable. Why? We asked. It was then that the city informed us that elderly people who might not be able to make the subtle turns could be driving the streets. They could run off the road. We call this protecting every issue that isn't an issue. We countered by saying that elderly people can make a subtle turn, and that if they cannot, they shouldn't be driving. Moreover, like the mouse in Colorado, no one knew if in fact there was a problem to begin with, in this case regarding the street design. The staff would not compromise, and the streets were built perfectly straight. In fairness, we believe no elderly people have run off any of the roads to date. Hurdle number 4, or, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's, you're kidding, right? A vacant piece of land was already developed on three sides. The fourth side fronted on a major road. We designed a small residential subdivision with one access point. The city didn't like this plan because they wanted two access points, which in fact was physically impossible to accomplish. Why two access points? One city staff member offered this explanation. What if an airplane crashed in the entryway of the project? How will the fire department get in and save the people? My response was plain and truthful. They wouldn't get in, and everyone would die. Of course, it is an absurdity to think that you can plan or respond to every event that more than likely will never happen. Moreover, even with two access points, the fire department, under these circumstances, wouldn't be able to save anyone anyway. The result? We took the staff's objection and went to the city council, which overruled the staff and approved the subdivision. Indeed, they saw the logic to our plan. I am happy to report that after 30 years, maybe a few birds, but no airplane has crashed into the subdivision. No meteorites have either. Lesson learned: prepare to get very good at jumping hurdles calmly. Know the power of control versus ownership. Remember, control of a piece of property is as effective as owning it, with the additional benefit of minimizing your risk. If you purchase a piece of property before it is entitled, you will need to think about the following factors that could impact your investment. Capital. You'll need either your own or your investors to purchase the property. Risk. You risk the capital invested if your entitlements are unsuccessful. Unprofitability. Your cost of capital and interest may eliminate any potential future profits. Marketability. You now have an unentitled property that you may not be able to sell. You may be wondering, why would a seller give you the time to go through the entitlement process without risking any money? There are some very valuable reasons. First, you can offer the seller more money than his property is presently worth, which is obviously appealing. You can do this because, remember, if you purchased the property outright, you would be paying interest on the capital used to purchase the property, so you might as well give that to the seller in the form of an increase in price. Another reason a seller would allow you the time needed to gain the entitlements relates to taxes. If the seller sold the property, most likely he or she would pay capital gains tax on the sale, currently 15% federal tax plus state tax. Then, when that money is reinvested and earning interest, that interest would be taxed as ordinary income, up to 38% under current law for federal income tax plus state and local taxes. If you offered the seller more money for their property to buy the time to get the entitlements and close the deal thereafter, the seller will be paying tax at the much lower capital gains rates, instead of the higher ordinary tax rates. Another incentive is offering to give the seller the survey, environmental report, soils report, traffic study, utility study, land plan, and title work you are doing as compensation for the time if you are not successful with entitlements and do not purchase the property. The seller will need those studies anyway with another buyer, and that information will decrease the time and upfront money needed by a new buyer. This information is worthless to you if you are not successful. You can even find out if the seller will pay for the reports mentioned above. You can offer the seller an increased price for the land and a percentage of the increased value you are creating from your knowledge and entitlement work. Since you don't have to pay for the reports, now you don't have any capital at risk and only upside potential with the increased value you will be creating through entitlements. This is the best real estate position to be in. Time can also be a blessing when a seller wants to find an exchange property before closing the sale of the current property, so there is no exposure to the strict time constraints for a 1031 exchange. By giving you time to get the entitlements, the seller gets more time to search for another property investment. Exchanges must be executed within a specified period, and this allows the luxury of time most sellers would love to have. Finally, a seller may want to be a part of the development on his property. The property may have been in the family for generations. There may be family pride regarding what is developed on the land. The motivation of a seller will either be monetary or family legacy. An agreeable agreement for you. Have your real estate attorney draft a standard letter of intent, LOI, for you to use with each seller. An LOI outlines the terms and conditions of a sale, is usually a non-binding agreement, but is used as a gentleman's handshake. Once you have an executed LOI, ask your attorney to draft a purchase agreement for execution using the signed LOI as your guide. Make sure you have the right within the agreement to rezone the subject property for your intended use. Once the purchase agreement is signed, you have the property under your control. I repeat, it is not what you own that leads to wealth generation, it is what you control. Once the purchase agreement is signed by all parties, open escrow with the title company and escrow officer you have learned to be the most reliable. Have the title company give you a title report with all recorded easements and liens and the requirements for an extended or lender's title policy. Your mission. Have your real estate attorney draft an LOI. Execute the LOI with the seller. Have your real estate attorney draft a purchase agreement with the appropriate provisions from the LOI, particularly the right to rezone the property. Get the agreement signed. You now control the property. Open escrow and get the title report. Some diligence is due. It is important to continue growing your knowledge base to protect your investment and avoid unwanted surprises. Consider these steps. Your mission. Review your title report with the help of your title company. Make sure there are no recorded covenants, conditions, or restrictions, CC&Rs, recorded against the property that would affect your intended use. Check for deed restrictions that would affect ownership or use of the property. Read the recorded easements and understand who has the right of access. Make sure you have legal access to your property. See if there are any assessments recorded against your property that you will become responsible for. Study who has the rights to the minerals on the property. Give the title report and all recorded documents to your civil engineer to create an ALTA builders/lenders survey. Once you have control of the property, have your team's real estate agent contact potential buyers for the property subject to your acquiring the entitlements. Don't think of a good real estate broker as a cost. Rather, he or she is a valuable member of the team. A good broker has developed credibility over many years with builders and buyers. This will help ensure your success. If the deal can't afford the real estate fee, don't do the deal. Work with that builder/buyer in the planning process. Do not plan your property around one buyer unless that person has paid you a sizable, non-refundable deposit if you are successful in entitling your property and he does not perform. If planned around one buyer, you might ultimately receive the entitlement, but no one else can use the plan. Real life story. Removing rocks from your soil may be mining. Recently, M3 companies were involved in moving 6 million cubic yards of dirt on one of our 2,000-acre master-planned communities. We were not selling the dirt or rock during the grading process, but simply sifting the dirt to eliminate rocks for the golf course. We also crushed the larger rocks on site to a more manageable size. By chance, a representative of the Bureau of Land Management, BLM, a federal government agency, was driving by the site and noticed what we were doing. When he returned to his office, he wrote us a letter saying we owed the BLM a royalty right for mining the minerals on the property, since it owned these rights from the original governmental patent. Almost every development crushes rocks on site and moves earth materials and screens soil. We explained that we weren't moving any material off-site or selling it, and therefore we did not believe we were mining minerals on the property. They replied to our argument that if we picked the rocks out of the soil by hand instead of using machines, they don't consider it mining. The rocks were far too big for that. Never before had they imposed this requirement on any other development of this scope. We ultimately negotiated a settlement with them to avoid the costly delays in construction and litigation. Lesson learned, expect the unexpected, and bone up on your negotiation skills. Surveys and reports. The next step is securing a lender's survey, which shows all of the recorded title report issues, such as easements, property lines, and net gross acreage square footage. It also outlines unrecorded roads and encroachments, legal descriptions, etc. It is used as the basis for all other planning on the property. Your land planner will use the survey's information for computing acreage and for laying out everything that you do. It is your foundation. Here is a guide you can use during this important phase. Your mission. Review your survey to see if there are any encroachments, such as fences, structures, etc., that your neighbors have on your property or you have on theirs. See if anyone is using unrecorded access points on your property or unrecorded paths and roads across your property that may be a claim for adverse possession by the using party. This may restrict financing and ability to develop. Determine if there are any power and gas line easements and how that may affect the usability and marketability of your property. Make sure your engineer includes floodplain information on the survey. Give the survey to your land planner to help you develop a land plan and layout. I never rely on my land planner's input only. I have found my learned knowledge and research is just as important to the final product. There is a belief, with some merit, that you design for a plan with a greater intensity and density than you really need, so you can cut back at a later date. Why? So that the NIMBYs and politicians can feel they have pushed the developer back and got their way. You are catering to today's political correctness. Your learned knowledge will tell you whether you should bring in a representative of the NIMBY group to be part of the land planning process. It is always better to have the NIMBYs as part of the planning process. Be prepared to cover your third-party vendors with liability insurance when they go upon the land of your seller to do their work. I would recommend that you provide at least $1 million of coverage. This insurance is relatively inexpensive. In addition, get these reports done up front. There's no point in waiting. A soils report. A soils report determines if there are any soil conditions that will increase the cost to build on the property, and therefore lessen the price someone can pay for the property. Some sites have expansive soil that would increase the cost of construction. Some sites have hard rock and may need to be blasted. That would increase cost too. If you are going to use septic tanks instead of city sewers, your soil condition might not meet the peculation requirements. Some sites even have underground fissures that are not readily determined. How important is a soils report? I have a true story. Real life story, low-cost property can be very costly. During the frenzy of the recent soaring real estate cycle, a buyer purchased 900 acres of land at a low price with the intent to flip it for a profit. The buyer came to me to help him after he had bought the property. The buyer did not order a soils report during the due diligence period prior to him buying the property. If he had, he would have realized that the soil was very expansive. That particular soil condition would make the foundation work for each house so cost prohibitive that the homes would have been priced out of the market. Sadly, although the land was acquired at a good price, the actual cost of the property was very high due to the increased development costs to mitigate the poor soil conditions. There wasn't much I could do. The buyer could have avoided all this by doing homework and getting a soils report. Lesson learned. Soil matters. Never skimp on things that cost little and can save you a bundle. A Phase 1 Environment Report. This report will show if your property is located within a Superfund site area, or if there are any environmental issues recorded on adjoining properties that may affect your property. It would include such things as a previous gas station on the adjoining property that had a fuel tank leak, which is now flowing under your property. If any issues are discovered, you'll receive a recommendation to do a Phase 2. This is more expensive and extensive. Laboratory testing will determine if contamination exists and what remediation methods need to be used. The remediation of environmental issues is often next to impossible to quantify. If your Phase 1 report comes back with a recommendation for Phase 2, back away from the property. Do not look back. And most of all, do not move forward on any property with environmental issues at this stage of your career. And one more thing. If your proposed property is in a rocky granite area, you should have your environmental engineer do a radon gas study to see if there is a need for mitigation. A constraints report. Besides doing the survey, have your civil engineer prepare a constraints report on the property. This will be a study of all the utilities to service the property. It will include water, sewers, telephone, gas, electric, cable, fiber optics, and storm sewers. This study will show the location, capacity, water pressure, service providers, and methods of access to these services. It will also ascertain whether you are going to incur extra development costs by resizing existing utilities to serve your development, or extending utility lines to provide these services to your property. Have your engineer provide any utility development fees and utility recovery charges/agreements in their report. A drainage report. This report will determine if you have any 404 issues. These are federal regulations by the Army Corps of Engineers on all navigable waterways. Don't think you need a stream on your property to come under this jurisdiction. It may only be an irrigation ditch. You also want to determine if there are any excess costs for retention, detention, or runoff of water from your property. Archaeological study. If you are in an area that has artifacts, or where artifacts are believed to exist, you should do an archaeological study. Just because you are far away from a colonial settlement or an ancient Native American village does not mean that something may not be buried on your property. Real life story. Unfortunately, the builder didn't strike gold. A home builder was well into the development of his project when he discovered artifacts while digging water and sewer lines. The project was immediately put on hold for 18 months while archaeologists, tiny picks and brushes in hand, meticulously uncovered and retrieved the artifacts. It almost bankrupted the builder because his capital costs, debt payments, contracts with vendors, and other cash outlays were dependent on his completion of the project on time. An archaeological study in advance of development may have prevented this calamity. Lesson learned. If it can happen, it just might. Don't tempt fate. FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, review. Make sure the FAA has not imposed any restrictions on your property. Is it located out of the noise zone and flight paths? It's a good idea to be sure. Wells. Check to see if there are any water wells on the property, and if they have been properly recorded with the State Department of Water Resources. Also check to see if there are any historical records on the depth of the well, pumping capacity, and drawdown of the water table. Make sure all abandoned wells are closed properly. The application. We're getting close now. You can begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel, assuming that all your reports came back positive and you didn't have to back away from the environmental hazards or anything else. It's time to make an application for the entitlement you are requesting. Every jurisdiction has different requirements. Some may require a traffic study, drainage study, landscape design, or letter from the school district on the impact of your proposed development on schools. Spend money only on the reports as are necessary. Your mission. Take your plan door to door and give every neighbor within 600 feet of your project a personal presentation of your plan. Bring with you a full color site plan and renderings of your development. Traffic information generated by your development, letter of support from the school district, your business card and contact information, a petition for the neighbor to sign in support of your project, printed cards giving the location, times, and dates of hearings, and the names, phone numbers, and email addresses of the mayor and city council members. Start your presentation with the neighbors farthest from your project. They may be the least interested. You will have a better chance to get their signature on a petition of support. Use those signed petitions of support when asking the next neighbor for his support. Keep building those support petitions for your presentation to the neighbors that are closest to the project and to show to members of the city council. Give only those supportive neighbors your printed cards with the times and dates of the hearings. How to talk with the neighbors. It's easy to make mistakes when talking with neighbors. Follow these guidelines and you should come out without incident. Things you should do. Dress neatly and be enthusiastic about your project. Always be polite. Present facts and be honest. Be prepared to answer objections. Listen, don't debate. Make friends and develop relationships. If you do not know an answer to a question, return to personally give an answer. It gives you another chance to develop a relationship. Be proud of what you are doing. Ask for support and get contact information. Communicate with your neighbors. Ask supportive neighbors to invite their friends to a small meeting so you can explain your project. Get petitions of support signed. Ask supportive neighbors to be at the hearings. Have dates, times, and locations of meetings ready as a handout that you can distribute. Ask for them to email and call city council members expressing their support. Have that information available to give to them as a handout. Get the support of the Chamber of Commerce, Home Builders Association, and Board of Realtors. Things you should not do. Do not leave any project information behind except for your business card and hearing information, and give it only to supportive neighbors. You may need to change your site plan while you are going through the process. If you leave your initial site plan behind, you will be accused of being deceitful by your neighbors if it changes in process. Do not exaggerate your project. Do not have group meetings initially. Group psychology is more difficult to cope with than handling individual concerns. Do not allow your differences with neighbors to become a matter of principle. Do not threaten neighbors with alternate uses, but point out to them the range of possibilities for which the land could be developed. At the same time, continue to call upon all of the people you have met over the previous 6 months, including your friends on the city planning staff, on the community boards, the planning commission, and the city council. Try to get the leaders within each group to support your project. Use that support and visit with every member of each group. This is very important. Politicians you have developed relationships with want to help you, but you need to give them the political reasons to support you, including narrowing the objections of the NIMBYs. Let the politicians know if there is neighborhood opposition, what objections they have, and what you are doing to resolve their issues. A politician always needs to understand why it is in his or her political interest to support you in the face of opposition. Self-interest and self-preservation. Being prepared for this through your previous 6 months' worth of studying how the politician has reacted to other cases before you made your application, you will have insight into the right answer almost instinctively. Remember, the vote that counts is the vote of the city council. Know that you have the votes that are required for approval before you allow your application to be heard for a final vote. Postpone the hearing until you have the votes committed. The end game. What are the best case scenarios for all your hard work? Your acquired knowledge and relationship building will help you obtain the right to purchase property you will entitle. You will get your property entitled, creating value. You will have a builder buy the property, with you profiting from the difference between the negotiated price from the landowner and your markup for entitling it. You will have succeeded by applying your knowledge and not your capital. Tip. Remember, you do not have to own a piece of property. You just have to control it. Knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. Starting small is the way to learn, but what you'll soon discover is that the size of the project is meaningless. You will go through all of the same steps for a small project as you would for a large project. That means the bigger projects have the potential to net you more money with the same amount of effort. It's just a matter of building confidence. The M3 companies have taken this direction, using our expertise in the planning, entitlement, and execution of master planned communities from our learned knowledge over 4 decades of work. From developing a 610-acre American ranch community in Prescott, a 1,100-acre Prescott Lakes community, and the 2,100-acre Wickenburg Ranch community, all in Arizona, to the 2,000-acre American Ranch Sandstone community outside Denver, and our 6,000-acre community in Eagle, Idaho, we have taken advantage of our entitlement knowledge to succeed. But make no mistake, you will make a lot of mistakes. Everyone does. Cut your losses short and let your gains run. Your own drive is the only limit to your success. The future. What is the future for someone who specializes in entitling real estate? We can count on governmental bodies to continue to impede property rights with each new law, regulation, ordinance, and environmental mandate. It becomes harder and harder each year to navigate through this minefield, and there are fewer people willing to make the attempt. Yet, the demand from development companies and builders for entitled property increases each year. In adversity, there is advantage and opportunity for those willing to pursue entitlements. And what is the key? Knowledge. It is the knowledge you will gain that will make you one of the most sought-after properties in the real estate industry. You can work for yourself, consult for others, or be in an executive position with a development company. Entitlements are the future of real estate. This chapter has given you the tools to create that future for yourself. Knowledge is your capital when it comes to entitlements. But unlike other forms of capital, such as cash, equity, or debt, your capital can never be taken away, and it can only grow and help you succeed. Most important, your capital is most valuable when the economy is in a recession. Sellers of properties are more receptive to giving you the time to entitle their property. Lenders who have taken properties back need someone with the knowledge to prepare their properties for resale. Why? Because you can add value to property that is losing value in the marketplace. That makes you indispensable, sought after, and in a very profitable position for yourself. It takes many months to entitle a piece of property for development or for resale. Use the downtime of a recession to entitle a property. When the recession ends, as it always does, you will be ready immediately to take advantage of the recovery because your property is ready for development. It is called great timing. Friends in high places during low times. During a recession, you can process your application more quickly because the city staff has very few applications to process. Furthermore, it is more difficult for political leaders to turn your project down in the face of growing municipal deficits. Don't forget, landowners are willing to give you the time to work on entitlements. They need you. My last words of wisdom are these. Be a contrarian. In a recession, people focus on their jobs, the economy, and the stock market. They rarely see an opportunity to take advantage of what only appears to be a dismal situation. When no one is investing money, when no one can borrow money, and when equity is disappearing on properties, keep this in mind. You have the most valuable capital during this period, your knowledge. Let others spend their time looking backward and protecting their current declining assets. You will be using your time pursuing the sleeping giant of real estate profitability, entitlements. It's time to get going.
W. Scott Shermer is a managing partner for M3 Companies. M3 Companies' core competency is developing master-planned communities that honor and advance the timeless heritage of the West. Shermer is president of Shermer Ball Company and CEO of SMDI Company. Since he began working in Arizona real estate in the late 1960s, he has entitled, acquired, syndicated, financed, developed, managed, and brokered real estate in Arizona, California, Idaho, Illinois, Oklahoma, and Utah. Shermer and the M3 Company's charities are children-based, giving support to Child Help, the Boys and Girls Club of Scottsdale, SARC, Anozera Foundation, and the Solid Rock Foundation.
18. Tom Wheelwright. The Tax Lien Investment Strategy. Tom Wheelwright is one of those people who is not just an expert in a very important aspect of investing. He is an investor himself who practices what he preaches. I like to surround myself with people like Tom because they don't just talk about what others should do, they actually do what they say. Tom is a CPA, a tax strategist who knows that the government rewards people who know the tax code and play by its rules. And he is also a real estate investor. Tom has spent more than 25 years working with sophisticated investors to help them develop innovative tax, business, and wealth strategies. Tom is a teacher at heart, and even in his early days when he worked for a Big Four accounting firm, he managed the training for thousands of CPAs. He makes the complicated simple, and that is no easy feat, because in order to do this, it takes a complete understanding of your subject and an ability to boil down the details to the ones that matter. Tom's skill comes from his years as a trainer and from his firm grasp of taxation and tax strategies. But Tom has influenced my life in a much more profound way than just through his knowledge of wealth strategies. As you recall in my introduction to Chapter 1, Tom's first chapter, then you know I mentioned his Mormon faith. Through Tom and others like him, I have learned much about the beliefs of this faith. His religion has many important lessons to share with a world that is in financial turmoil. One lesson that comes from the Mormon faith, and that seemed odd before, now doesn't seem quite so odd. That lesson is the Mormon practice of storing enough food, water, and money to survive for at least 1 year. Many of my Mormon friends do this, and so do my wife Kim and I. We put these necessities away in case of economic disaster, or worse, financial collapse. How close did we come in 2008? We are all used to a world of plenty and don't think twice about what we would do for food and other necessities in an emergency. As many of us know, our supermarkets only have enough food to last 3 days. And if you have ever lived in an area that is hurricane-prone, and the forecast is predicting a storm on the way, you know how quickly the most critical supplies are snatched up. Water, bread, canned goods, batteries, and other vital supplies vanish from the store shelves in a matter of hours. In 2008, the world came very close to becoming a world of collapsed credit cards. Think about this for a while. What would happen if the world stopped accepting credit cards? What could you buy with only the cash you have on hand, the money in your wallet, the change in that jar? Not much. I believe the world would shut down. Of course, I don't wish for financial disaster, but Tom has taught me about preparation. And being prepared allows me to keep my mind free of worry, to think clearly, even as we enter a period of economic chaos, and to seize the opportunities. These are the times when fortunes are made. Tom has been an influence to me on many levels, and I honor his integrity. This chapter and the knowledge he shares is a must-read for anyone seizing investment opportunities now and in the future. I greatly value him, personally and professionally. He is a true friend. Robert Kiyosaki.
If you have even taken a quick glance at the chapter titles in this book, or considered its sheer size, then you are probably realizing there are as many ways to invest in real estate as there are models of homes. The key, of course, is to invest in the type of real estate that best suits you and your personal investing preferences. Your investment preferences may include risk level, tax advantages, and simplicity, among others. For example, some people prefer investing in single-family homes because they like the simplicity, and there isn't a lot of management involved. Others prefer commercial real estate, so they have to manage only a few properties and can deal with business owners as tenants instead of dealing with families. Still others prefer to invest in apartment buildings, where the loss of a single tenant doesn't make a major impact on the overall cash flow from the investment. And then there are those who prefer to invest in raw land, where there are no tenants at all. So before you begin investing in real estate, take some time to figure out which type of real estate is best for you based on your personal investing preferences. You are likely to be more successful by doing something you enjoy, and of course, it makes life a lot more fun. The question I get most often from investors just starting out in real estate is how to decide which type of real estate investing is right for them. Again, remember to focus on your personal investment preferences. For a complete list of the personal investment preferences we review with our clients, go to our ProVision School of Wealth Strategy at www.wealthstrategyu.com. Once you have figured out your personal investment preference,